the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Delighted to be joined for the Culture Club by a man who's had a wonderfully varied career. Most people would know him from his time with Stockton's Wing as guitarist, singer and songwriter. But he's also had a really interesting involvement in the food industry for a couple of decades as well. And he's also really interested in and trained in brain health and dementia. Mike Hanrahan, thank you very much for taking the time to join
us. Delighted to be here, Matt.
Okay, most people listening to this will know you from Stockton's Wing. But tell us a little bit about the other things that you've done there that I've mentioned about the whole thing in the food business and also getting a postgrad on equity and brain health at Trinity College.
Yeah. Well, the food thing was just, I always loved to cook. And then in 2006, I'd been chairman of IMRO for quite a number of years, and it was really hectic. I just got burned out.
That's the Irish Music Rights Organisation.
Yeah, I just got burned out from all that. And I wanted to change. So I remember Bertie Ahern had the SSIA money.
Yes.
And it all came to fruition, and people were buying cars and going on holidays. And I always wanted to learn a bit more about my food. So I was fascinated with Ballymaloe because of Doreena Allen. I just loved what she did with food. So I went down there for 3 months, and I ended up spending 10 years in the business. A full year of it, actually. I went back teaching in Ballymaloe, which was really cool. That was great, being part of the faculty. And then, yeah, I had a great time. I spent 3.5 years with Pat Short. He had a bar in Castle Martyr next to Ballymaloe, and I ran the kitchen there for him. So we had great fun there. And yeah, I had 10 amazing years, I must say. And the brain health was just, my mum had dementia, and I had no idea what it was. So I needed to learn about it. And I was confused by the whole stigma associated with dementia. And I needed to try and do something and use my platform, whatever way I could, to kind of get the word out and talk about dementia and be more open about it. And I'd written a song for Mum, and we recorded it with the Forget-Me-Nots Choir. And then I had this idea to write a book of short stories, but I needed to understand what I was writing about. So somebody suggested to apply for the Global Brain Health Institute Fellowship in Trinity, and I did. And I spent the most amazing year with neurologists and neuroscientists in Trinity, and it just transformed my life completely.
In what way?
I'm completely wedded to the whole notion of searching for ways to bring the creative arts into dementia care. I've learned what goes on globally and science research. I work with scientists, and we understand now how important the creative arts are for our brain health. Because there's as important as any tablet, you know, intervention, because of what they give to the people with brain health issues, whether it be acquired brain injury, Parkinson's, dementia, whatever area, the arts have a huge influence on our well-being.
Would the music be particularly relevant in relation to that, particularly in that people might recall music from their childhood they grew up with, or early adulthood, yeah, that was important to them, that brings them back?
It's massive, because as we age, we naturally spring clean our brains and we store all the good stuff up in the front. So that's why it's so easy for us to access it in times when the dementia does not get into that area of our brain. So if we're introduced to that kind of those memories, it triggers, and it gives such a beautiful dopamine hit into people's brains. So I'm all for this. I love the fact that people have entertainment in care homes, but I've convinced that you can sing ballads for an hour to somebody, but there's bound to be somebody in there, particularly at our age, who might want to hear AC/DC, you know.
I remember having that very discussion about 10 years ago with a couple of people on the show who were talking more about, no offence, from Johnny McAvoy being played in nursing homes. And I said, but lads, these people want to hear the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
That's what's relevant to their age now.
And that's what's happening more and more. There are some great young organisations developing in Ireland and globally. And people are getting more involved in it. I mean, there's a whole movement called neuro arts. David Byrne, for instance, from Talking Heads, he's right at the forefront of that, working with neurologists in America. And his focus is on dance and what dance does for your brain. So it's really
that explains exciting. When I saw him in concert earlier this year, he never stopped moving on stage. Never stopped.
And he won't let the band stop either.
No, 73 he is as well. And it was just, you know, not high impact, but he just kept going the whole time.
That's the whole premise of his new show, is about getting people moving, and it's good for the brain. So, and he works with some of the top neurologists in America in this. He's right at on the underbelly of everything that's gone on.
Are you making a career of this?
No. I'm making a life out of it. I don't see it as a career at all. I'll finish the book of short stories that I eventually started, and I go around. No, I don't see it as a career. It's something, I found something I want to do that I really love, and I'm very passionate about it.
And has it brought you back into music in the way that you perhaps had let slide a little bit for a while?
Yeah, it's brought me back into writing much more. I write more now, and I write more songs, and I'm back on the road. I love touring, and my music is my career. That's what gets the bread and butter. The other, the brain health is just a beautiful new room I've found that I've got all these incredible people, and I love learning. So I'm very blessed to have had that opportunity to try and.
But Stockton Wing, still playing Stockton's Wing. You're playing, what is it, the Hibernacle Festival in Rathfarnham on the 19th?
The Hibernacle, yeah.
Hibernacle.
And that's going to be great because Scullion are doing that festival as well. And we used to tour with Scullion all those years ago. And Wallace Bird is coming over from Berlin. I absolutely adore her music and adore her. She's a gorgeous woman. And so, yeah, it'll be good. It's a different kind of a festival, Matt, where it's more family orientated. There's no big screens flashing around us. It's really chilled out festival. I did it 2 years ago and it's fantastic. And we kind of mix and mingle with each other and sing songs and in the front room and then go on to our gig. And it's a good vibe. I suppose a throwback to our hippie days in a way, I suppose.
Let's go, how you got started in music. The first question we ask every guest on the Culture Club is the first single they ever remember buying. What's yours?
Horselips, Johnny's Wedding.
Tell us about this. Why did you pick that?
Because Horselips transformed my thinking in music. I came from a very traditional music background. I just picked up the guitar at that stage, and I had been playing tin whistle, and then I heard this.
So you grew up in County Clare, wasn't
it? County Clare in Ennis,
yeah.
And there was 8 of us, and we were just all of us played music. But when I heard, like I'd been, I suppose, rare with the Kilfenora Kelly Band and. You know, Tullagh Kelly Band, and then suddenly you're hearing drums and bass and keyboards and the whistle, and I was completely taken by it, and I got to find out more about the band, and then they released another single a few months later, and then that amazing album, Happy to Meet, Sorry to Part, and Horselips became the centre of my life as a kid, and for music I fell in love with the band. I even kept a scrapbook of Horselips. And I still have it to this day. And we did a gig in 20...
Jeez, Eamon Carr and Barry Devlin would be delighted, I'd say, to see that, wouldn't they?
Well, I met them. Eamon wasn't doing the gig. It was 2017 or 2018 in Drogheda at the Fla. They were doing a gig with us. And I arrived into the dressing room with the scrapbook and I got him to sign it again. So it was great fun. And Johnny was there that time, yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of Johnny's Wedding.
Thank you.
You know, Mike, I saw a short performance of Riverdance last Friday night. There was an event memorial for Veronica Guerin, and people were saying just how transformative that was in the 1990s, Riverdance. But I think Horselips in the 1970s, in their own way, maybe not as international, but for Ireland, were transformative.
Oh, there's no doubt. And I guess we had no music like it beforehand. We were all, we were fed like trad music, and there was no great folk bands going around, and there was certainly no folk rock that we would have known. And it got all of us, most of us at the time, we'd been listening to Rory Gallagher, and
yeah,
that was our Irish music connection. And then suddenly you have a band, and then you see Barry Devlin coming out with a shamrock green bass guitar, and the long hair and the hippie vibe, and it was really great. It was exciting, you know, and they played everywhere. I mean, they played Ennis so many times, so I got to see them, and they were easily accessible. They were always there to say hello, and they were very kind and lovely people. So they drew a lot of people into their area, and a lot of people bought the album. And they were always pushing the boat out, even the album cover, I mean, in the shape of a concertina of Happy to Meet, Sorry to Part. It was like, wow. So they were pushing it. And I loved it. It certainly had a huge influence on me. And I have a direct link with Stockton's Wing on what we did with music. It was, we were always pushing it out. And I think it's because Horsips kind of made me believe that's possible, you know.
I should mention, of course, you were the songwriter, weren't you, on Beautiful Affair, which is still, God knows how many years on now, 40 plus years on, a wonderful track. We asked you for a favourite album, and you said you've loads of albums and each one means something to you. Yeah. So give us just examples before we hear the one that you've picked out specifically.
Well, I listen to new music and old music, and I collected vinyl all my life.
You still buy vinyl, do you?
No, I don't like the new vinyl. I don't like the digital vinyl at all. I don't. I'm a snob. I don't get it.
Fair enough.
I don't get it at all. Because the music was recorded analog, and I don't. It's not. I don't make a political stance on it either. I couldn't care less. But I have enough albums at home. I think. Of the recent bands, I love bands like Eels, the Canadian band. I love what they have. I've got a good few of their albums.
Got the likes of Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Neil Young. They're all the ones, I suppose, we would expect.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Lisa Hannigan, I love.
What a voice.
Yeah. I love what she does with music. But my favourite one, when you were asking me, like, what's your favourite one? I listen in the summertime in the garden. Myself and my wife put on Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms, on a regular basis, and we sit back and sip in the sun and listen. And I've listened to the album a million times. It is...
Well, I think that might surprise people, given all the others that you've mentioned.
See, I think it's a guitarist album. It's a guitar player's album.
Yeah.
It's there are so many different styles of guitar played in it. He shines. And he
Mark Knopfler, we had him on the programme last year, actually, yes.
He shines as a producer and a performer on that album. And I think maybe it might have been the first album where he might have had total control over what was going on. And there are epic songs and epic guitar playing, and there's all these layers and layers and layers of beautiful music. So I never tire of that album at all.
From that, we have So Far Away. I'm tired of being in love and being all alone when you're so far away from away from me, so far away from me, so far I just can't see, so far away from me, you're so far away from me, so tired when I have to end. Dire Straits from the album Brothers in Arms. You mentioned Eels already for favourite albums, one of your favourite bands. You have Lancome in there as favourite albums as well.
Oh God, that album, Fake, is incredible. And I suppose it's not surprising for someone like me with Stockton's Ring would enjoy what they're doing with the music. I think they're just taking it on to a different level again. And that when that album came out, so maybe it's 2 years now, I just put it in my headphones and I didn't stop listening to it. And I became the album, and the album got into my skin. And all the different layers that's going on in their music, I think it's so exciting. And
okay, and then for favourite artist, you have Ronnie Drew, the late Ronnie Drew.
Yeah.
You had a working relationship with him as well, didn't you?
I had a working relationship and a very deep personal relationship with him as a friend. I knew him for years when Stockton's Ring came on the scene. The Dubs kind of took us under their wing and looked after us, and we became friends. And then in the late 90s, 96 or 97, he asked me, did I know anybody who would help him out on a solo career? And I said, as it happens, I do. I know a guy from Clare who'd love the opportunity. And we got together and he wrote two amazing theatre shows. It was at the height of his creative sense. Alcohol wasn't part of his life. His whole focus was entertainment, the stage, the gig. So I was really blessed to have experienced that with him. And he was a consummate professional. And we worked on the show every day after gigs in the morning, breakfast, trying to get it right. So I had an amazing time with him, and we travelled forever and ever in the car around Europe, a bit in America. We did a couple of runs in off-Broadway and in London. And we had an amazing time. And then in the middle, we hooked up with Eleanor Shanley, and we recorded a single with Eleanor and Ronnie called A Couple of More Years. And that became an iconic hit then for the two of them. So I produced two albums for that duo. He was great. Ronnie was a great man.
What we're going to play is something a bit more traditional, perhaps. Molly Malone.
Cool.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone. As she wheeled her wheelbarrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. She was a fishmonger, and sure 'twas no wonder, for so were her father and mother before. And they wheeled their barrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive.
The also distinctive voice of Ronnie Drew with Molly Malone. So one more bit of music. You've been at countless gigs, I suspect, as well as playing in so many yourself. But I'm interested in the one that you've picked out, Anthony and the Johnsons at Vicar Street for the I Am a Bird Now tour. Why is that?
I'd heard the album on radio, Tracksmith, and I was just completely taken by the voice and the approach to the music. It was very, clean, beautifully produced. And I loved the sound of the piano, and his voice was just stunning. So I got the album, and then, of course, on the album, Boy George is a guest on the album, as is Lou Reed. So there was all these little layers. So and he was from this underground movement in New York. And I got into all that stuff of what was going on there and learned about him and his life. And then suddenly he was in Dublin, and I got two tickets, and I couldn't get rid of the other ticket. Anybody likes who? Anthony who? But I ended up finding a friend of mine who said, yeah, I know him. And so the two of us went to the gig and, oh my God, I've seen him quite a few times. He's stunning live.
Well, we don't have him from Vicar Street, but he has been on later with Jules Holland. So let's hear Anthony and the Johnsons, Hope There's Someone. Johnsons would hope there's someone. Now, favourite movie actor or director, you've unashamedly gone for a friend.
I couldn't walk out of here and go back down to Limerick or go anywhere if I didn't mention Pat Short. I just, life would not be worth living.
Okay. Why is it you've picked Pat Short out though? Because he is an exceptionally talented individual as well as being your friend.
I love him as an actor. I love him as a person, but I've seen so many of his shows, his stage shows. I've seen his film. I've seen him on stage as a comic, and he really gets into the part. I think he's, you know, he lives the part. And I remember seeing him the Inishir, what was it? The
Inishirin.
Yeah, no, it was another play he did with Daniel, a man from the English actor.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah. What was that? I forget what that was called.
It's come up recently. I should remember it, but I can't.
Inishir. Oh, geez, the Cripple of Inishman.
Ah, yes.
Yes, good man, Mike. Welcome back. Yeah, he was in that, and I went to London to see him there, and he was really amazing. So and he's directing now. He's directing a few small films. And I did a tour with him recently when we did a TV show and we toured it. And he was even directing that. Like, he just takes complete control. He's a control freak. So I think, yeah, he's great.
Well, we have a clip from Garage, which is now 19 years old, directed by Lenny Abrahamson and starring Pat Short as Josie, the small-time petrol attendant who's the source of mockery by other locals.
How are things above?
Good now, good. Tell us, what's new in Petrocase?
Is he?
Really?
We're going late at the weekends now. Picking up?
Go away.
Aye.
They mentioned something about it on Sky News, all right.
People passing by anyways, and we decided to f*** you. Exactly. Houses flying up around the lake, and we decided...
Can I just ask you one thing, Josie?
What?
Who's we?
Al?
No, but I was just wondering, like, I didn't realise you had a stake in the business. We?
Mr. Geller.
Ah, oh, that's better. That we.
Yeah.
The we.
True enough.
All right,
Breffney,
Josie, point there, Val. All right for a pint, Bon?
You're fine.
You nearly missed it, Sully.
I'd say I did not. What?
Josie was giving us his 5-year plan.
For f- sake.
Weren't you, Josie?
Just now.
Tell him, Josie.
We know the crack.
What?
We're open late above the weekends. Just Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays.
But have you heard Tom Galloway's plan yet, Josie?
Nothing, miss him.
Go on. You must have been consulted.
No.
All right, here it is. 5-year plan, okay? Get some f***ing idiot to look after your garage, will you? That's the easy bit, isn't it, Josie?
No.
Sit on it. Don't invest like not a f***ing dime. Then when the time is right, knock it down and start building apartments.
No.
And just f*** you out on your ear.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Garage from 2007. Now, favourite play, theatre show or musical, you've gone for something called An Old Song Half Forgotten.
Yeah, well, I went to see the play in the Abbey. It was when I was in Trinity, when I was studying, and quite a few of us went from my fellowship, and I was completely taken aback by the performance, and because I knew what was involved in the background of it. I knew some of the scientists who were working with the show to make sure that they were getting the right message out. And Brian was just
Brian Murray
was amazing in the part, and he had an earpiece on for the entire show
because he was living with Alzheimer's.
He was living with Alzheimer's. He had short term memory loss, so he had an earpiece, and there was a guy behind stage who was firing out the lines to him, because he could remember them then, but it was seamless. At no point did you get a sense that he was kind of waiting for the message. His performance was so good, and we met afterwards, and I just think he sent such a great message of positivity about just because you have Alzheimer's or other kind of types of dementia, you can still carry on and live and have agency in your life and do the things you want to do. And rather than just being, as soon as you're diagnosed, being parked off, he showed that, no, I've got so much more to say. And he was such courage, and his wife as well. They were just courageous. And then the whole production, his sidekick on the play, how he had so much respect for Brian and the quartet who played. It was a beautiful experience.
Okay. Favourite book or author? You have a lot of books, I believe.
Lots. I've lots.
Okay. And you have cookbooks in particular, do you?
I do. I like cookbooks. I like Otto Lengi as a cookbook. He's a chef. I like Dorina's books. I have loads. Nigel Slater is great. I like cookbooks that kind of, you can trust the chefs have worked at the recipes, of course, because there are a lot of cookbooks out there where they give the recipes to some team and the guy who has his name on the book will never even see one of the ingredients. And there's quite a lot going on that. There was a friend of mine who was an editor for years. She edited Nigel Slater. So she used to have some nightmare stories about what goes on. So I like a chef that gets in. There's an Italian guy called Locatelli who gets into the nub of what he's using in his product. And I find that interesting.
But you also read a lot of Irish history and a lot of Irish fiction.
Yeah, I'm a fanatic on Irish history. I'm honed in on the period from 1890 to 1992, that Cultural Revolution. I think when we started looking at 1916, back in 2016, I had to learn more about it. So I went in and I discovered about the artists who were involved in that whole movement and how much they were part of the backbone of it. And lo and behold, what shook me was, at right at the spine were women who were driving this. And of course, our history airbrushed women out of that period of our history, and we never knew anything about them. Whereas now, thanks to the government for the decade of centenaries, they've pumped money into that. And young female historians are now searching those. There's a great historian in Dublin, Liz Gillis, who is searching all the stories of the women, and yeah, I'm fascinated by it.
And we're going to have a National Women's Museum as well, I think, is under plan. Okay, you've also mentioned with the likes of Nuala O'Connor Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Yeah, I just always loved him. I've been reading him for years. I just love the way he'll open the front page and you're immediately, there's a short story nearly in every line, you know.
Okay, let's go to TV. And from your childhood, what do you remember most?
When we were out playing all the time, or I was playing music, so the only TV I remember would have been the Reardons or Dallas. You know, probably Dallas was the big thing for us as kids. And
well, let's play a bit of Dallas. Where Patrick Duffy, playing Bobby Ewing, confronts his dad, Rock Ewing, played by Jim Davis, and JR, played by the famous Larry Hagman, over his role in the family business.
Maybe you can explain something to me, like why I wasn't told that Daddy was going to pull $10 million out of Ewing Oil accounts. Did that slip your mind?
You just hold on, Bobby. JR don't discuss my business with you or anybody else unless I tell him, you understand?
Okay, Daddy. Then why didn't you tell me? Didn't you think I should know?
I was going to tell you tonight.
Tonight? I want those kind of things discussed with me before you act, not after. Your dealing behind my back is making me look like a fool.
Now, just what the hell are you talking about?
I called Les at the bank and asked him to transfer $12 million from the account.
So what? We got 100 times that much.
I'm talking liquid assets. Cash, Daddy, cash. And we don't have that amount. And you know why? Because you took $10 million.
You damn right I took it. It's mine.
That money belongs to Ewing Oil.
And who in the hell do you think Ewing Oil is? It's me. Ewing Oil belongs to me, and don't you forget it, boy.
And you gave me Ewing Oil to run, in writing. And that makes you obliged to consult me before you do anything that concerns that company.
Obliged? You telling me that I'm obliged to ask you how to spend my own money any damn way I see fit?
That's right. You gave me the power to run that company, and damn it, I intend to run it.
So I gave you power, huh? Well, let me tell you something, boy. If I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gave you power. Real power is something you take.
Maybe it's the early version of Succession. What do you watch now?
I love sports. I love documentaries. And then I love sports as well. I'd watch any type of sport. I like the live gigs too. I love the festivals in the summer. Because you don't get to the festival. I don't like going to festivals anymore. But it's great to be sitting at home with a beer and you're able to be at the Isle of Wight or something.
And 8 out of 10 Cats as well, I believe, is one of your favourites.
I love it. I don't know what it is. And it's not Rachel Riley. She's magnificent. But I just love the comedians. And I'm a fanatic on crosswords and words, wordplay. So you kind of get it all. And I like Jimmy Carr.
One final thing, a buried treasure. And you've given us a book that you read first, I think, as a teenager, Narcissus and Goldmund by Herman Hesse.
Yeah. I was given to it by my first love, was a girl from Holland. And I fell in love with her in Doolin when we were down there as hippies, young hippies. And she gave me this book. And I read it for every decade I read it because it's coming up next year. I'll read it again now. But it was a beautifully written kind of a philosophy book about a young person getting out into the world and then the old monk trying to chastise him and keep him at bay, and then he realizes, no, just let him free. And I think I've become both characters in my life. I was that young monk heading off, and I was shunned everything and went out into the world, and now I'm Narcissus back in my old age, and yeah.
You're not that old. Mike Hanrahan, it's been great having you. Stockton's Ring playing the Hibernacle Festival in Rathfarnham on the 19th of July. Thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.